This is the PC Gamer Podcast for the week of January 22nd, 2007. This is episode 68. Welcome. Hello to you and you and you. It's the PC Gamer Podcast. I'm your host, Kristen Salvatore, and if I had a tagline, this is where you'd hear it. But since I don't, I'd also like to welcome our editor-in-chief, Greg Viederman.
Hello.
Apparently that's his tagline. Backspace columnist and former editor-in-chief, Gary Whitta.
I don't have a tagline either.
Associate editor, Dan Stapleton.
None here either.
Jeremy, podcast producer Jeremy Williams, bring it home.
A virus ate my email.
You know what? You're stuck with that one now. Yeah. That's your tagline now.
I'd like to come up with one.
Okay.
A strong mind and a strong behind.
Right.
That's my tagline.
Okay. Then you're stuck with it, you know. Moving on. That's it. Okay. Forevermore. Hey, you guys. According to Peter Moore, mark your calendars because January 30th, 2007 will be the most significant day in gaming for the next several years.
Wow,
really? What's happening?
That's what he says. That's the day that Windows Vista is released.
Yeah,
he goes on to describe it in this press release as, you want to know why it's the most significant day in gaming for the next several years? I'll tell
you. Please, please, please.
because it's the first OS built with gaming as, and I quote, a core scenario.
And he really speaks the lingo of the gamers.
That's true. He does. He speaks to me. It includes DX10 support, of course. There's a lot of talk about the parental controls, which we can talk about in a minute, and, of course, Live Anywhere. So my question to you is, most people who are on this podcast, well, I guess three of the five on this podcast, attended yesterday a Games for Windows event.
Four of the five.
Here in San Francisco.
Everybody but Jeremy went.
Oh.
Oh.
Yes.
Jeremy, you were there in spirit, man. I got news for you.
I felt you there. I felt your presence.
I did. So my question, peeps, is what do we think? Like, is he telling the truth? Is this enough? Are we stoked? Like, what did we get out of this event other than a free lunch? Although the green bean salad was really good.
It was very lemony. I agree. It was fantastic.
I thought it was
a great event. The games on display looked fantastic. Disappointed I didn't see Halo 2 running there. But, you know, played Hellgate, played Crysis, Shadowrun. What else was there? World in Conflict,
Uno,
very important. Can't forget Uno. It all looked great. My only disappointment, the only problem I had with the whole thing was that, you know, Vista is launching on the 29th, next week on the 29th, next Monday, and there is not a single DirectX 10 game ready to go.
Which makes it a less significant day.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it'll be a significant day once we see the benefits of DirectX 10.
I would have expected at least Flight Simulator, since that's their very own first-party game.
I think they're going to be patching it. I don't know when
they will be patching it. I was not told that it would be a day and date. I guess it's possible, but I don't think that's the case. The problem really is that the hardware didn't show up until a month and a half ago.
And the really worrisome part, actually, is that NVIDIA still has not put out drivers for the 8800
for Vista.
Yeah, so. If you have the Vista beta or release candidate 2, right now you cannot use an 8800 on it, even to use DirectX 9 stuff, which is really kind of annoying. But apparently
if you think about Vista as a gaming platform, alongside Xbox, PlayStation 3, whatever, Nintendo, the way that Microsoft seemed to be wanting to position it with this initiative, it's kind of the worst launch lineup ever.
kind of.
Okay,
nothing.
Well, maybe I was swayed by the green bean salad, but I was actually really happy when I walked out of there yesterday.
No, I was too.
Was
we were all happy.
I got to play Crysis for the first time ever, which was awesome.
Crysis looks amazing, and you know what? I think Shadowrun is going to end up. I have to say, I think the last time I saw it was what, 6 months ago. I'm really surprised. I think it's really coming along. It's a really interesting game. DJ, you played it for the first time yesterday.
I did play it for the first time. Yeah, and it was fun. I creamed somebody who was playing on the gamepad.
Although they claim that with all the balances that they've put into the game with auto targeting and such on the Xbox side, that it really is split down the middle. If you've got a good PC player playing against a good Xbox player with the auto-targeting enabled, obviously.
Maybe this guy just sucked because I wiped the floor.
I just think the game's really interesting. Like, it's something a little bit different. I mean, Dan, do you want to explain?
The character I played as was like a, I'm not exactly sure, it was an elf or something.
That's not the interesting part.
But he had some powers, like, you know, racial specific powers. Like, he was able to glide. He was able to teleport, although I never really quite got the hang of the teleportation.
Those aren't just race specific. Like, as you, for any of the characters, as you progress through the game, you can buy those and you map them to your, so they're kind of available to everybody.
Yeah, and there was also like an enhanced vision thing where I could see where people were through walls and stuff like that. It was kind of cool. I did have fun playing with it. I probably lingered at that game longer than I did for Crysis, but that was mostly because somebody was waiting behind in line for me for Crysis. there were more stations for Shadowrun.
I had a chance to talk to Mitch Gittleman, who's the studio manager over at FASA in charge of Shadowrun, and we had a nice little conversation about the game.
He's a super intense dude, isn't he?
He's very intense, and he's very passionate about his game.
Yeah.
Which I like to see, obviously. But he pointed out that in most shooters, there's only two outcomes whenever you come face-to-face with an opponent. You know, it's either you kill them or they kill you, and that's it.
Well, sometimes you kill each other.
You kill each other, that's true. But basically, it's kill or be killed. And what's cool about Shadowrun is it adds this element of, well, no, I'm totally outmatched here. I'm just going to vanish. I'm just going to vanish into a puff of smoke and reappear somewhere else. And you can regroup and maybe come back and, you know, kill a few people before being taken down yourself. And it's a new element. And I'm very actually interested to see how it plays out when I get some time with it. I didn't have a chance yesterday.
The Microsoft folks are super excited about that game. Like, every one of them that I spoke to was all starry-eyed over it, so that's kind of interesting. But, of course, we were starry-eyed in particular over Crysis, as you were saying, and over Hellgate.
Yeah.
That opening cinematic to Hellgate
is brilliant. Awesome.
Whoa!
Yeah,
we were talking to Bill Roper about it. Bill Roper's the head of Flagship Studios. And is he? What is his title specifically? They've all got these wacky titles. I can never keep track.
I actually don't know his title.
I think he's the CEO.
Yeah, I think he's too.
So he's master and commander of Flagship and Hellgate, and he was telling us. You know, I was asking about this the cinematic, which is, you know, it looks like something you'd see in like a theatrical movie. It's really good quality. I was saying, you know, it looks like when you left Blizzard, you took the ethic of, you know, having a fantastic cinematic with you. And he was telling us that, yeah, you know, when they were shopping around for somebody to do this for them, they were going to people and saying, we want something that is, you know, at the same level it would be for Blizzard, you know, nothing less. And they really delivered. It's really amazing.
Yeah, it's really high quality. It looks just like a cinematic that Blizzard would produce. But I think Blur is the name of the company that does it, and they've done a number of. I think Blur is the company that THQ typically uses. For their cinematics. I forget what other games they've done, but everything they've done in the past has been phenomenal, and this is no exception. That movie is fantastic.
So other than you know, other than that, and of course the special time we got to spend with my special friend Chris Taylor, who was also there yesterday, was Crysis the thing we were most excited about?
For me, definitely, yeah.
I mean, is Crysis the thing like we're kind of most excited about with regard to Vista, or do we even care?
I want to play the thing in all its DirectX 10 glory, and so since you can only get DirectX 10 on Vista, I'm of course excited to play, you know, on Vista. I think what I came away from it was, is like, you know, Vista's going to be cool. I think 2007 is going to be an amazing year for PC games. There are so many cool games coming out this year. Vista is, you know, a part of that, obviously. But more than anything, I'm just excited by the glut of good games we're going to be playing. And personally, I'm most looking forward to Hellgate, me being the Diablo whore that I am. I'm already tired of seeing that game. I just want to play it. I just want to have it, you know, just close my door and hide away for, you know, a good month by myself, probably in my underwear, and just go at it. Go to town. So,
was there any talk about the Hellgate pricing yet? There, did they announce anything? Yeah.
No.
But Bill Roper did refer to it as an MMO.
Okay.
Yeah.
That which is something he hadn't done before that I've seen. Like, yeah. He said, you know, as opposed to other MMOs, Hellgate is. But I got you. But
they're still working on the pricing model, though. I think they're not talking about it because they haven't yet decided on it.
I was impressed by almost all the games that I saw there. I mean, you know, Crysis looked absolutely phenomenal. You know, it's easy to say, well, you know, it's just graphics, but I mean, they really are the most amazing looking graphics I've seen in a game.
The explosion when that helicopter went down is easily, hands down, the best explosion I've ever seen in a game.
Actually, you know what? Did you see the nuke go off in World in Conflict?
That was the best
explosion I've ever seen. It's amazing.
There was lots of good stuff, but kind of more than any specific game, I was actually just kind of interested to see Vista running, which I've actually never seen it running in the wild, like on live on a PC, and it's very pretty. I really liked the Games Explorer stuff, and I guess the stuff that I was most keen to see and was most happy to see working was the Live Anywhere stuff, where it really is as seamless as they promised it would be, where, you know, your gamer tag, whether you're playing on Xbox or playing on PC, it's the same gamer tag. They're going to have achievements in PC games, which I think is something I hadn't heard about before, which I think is fantastic. And they will all, you know, if I play FIFA Soccer on you know, PC, and then, you know, go play another game on Xbox and get achievements, it all goes towards my single unified gamer score, which I think is terrific. And, you know, we've seen how compelling it's been for the achievement. You know, when they first rolled out the achievements, I thought they were quite silly, but, you know, a year or so on, they really are a very compelling reason to play the Xbox version of a game rather than another version, and now that's something that's going to be brought to PC, so I think that's great.
I still think they're quite silly. In City of Heroes, when I was playing that, they had the badges you could get for doing, you know, crazy stuff.
Dan is just beyond achievements.
I just don't really see the point. You know, it's like,
but you're in the minority. I mean, I don't care much about it. But, you know, like, I've got whatever I've got now, like 1,500 points on Live.
Dude, if Life was one big loot drop, that's like, you'd be thrilled.
Yeah, I'm all about the loot drops. This is, and it is like to Gary's point, I think it is terrific. I think, you know, a lot of Xbox gamers who realize that now there's this whole other platform that they can get points on are going to probably jump over and play some games just to get the points. It sounds silly, but I'm sure it's going to happen.
It was just another thing to grind on. I don't like grinding. I don't want to grind out points just to stay ahead of you.
Don't play that way.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
So is it only games that are branded games for Windows, like games that...
They haven't said, but I'm pretty sure that's the case.
Okay.
And Live Anywhere is actually apparently shipping with Shadowrun. Like, that'll be included. That'll be the official launch. Yeah, so Shadowrun basically is, for the most part, according to Mitch, you know, it's pretty darn done. They're really just polishing the hell out of it right now, waiting for Live to be ready, Live Anywhere to be ready, so that they can launch.
They said yesterday that Halo 2 for Vista will be the first game that actually has achievements. That's the first game released where you'll be able to get achievements, so that's cool. But again, rather than just the specific games, it was kind of fun and almost a bit surreal to see, like, your Xbox Live, or really what is just now your Live gamer tag, you know, on PC in Vista, and to see your scores and to see your achievements and to see your friends list. And there's a nice little icon that shows, you know, if people are playing on the same system as you, there's no little icon, but, you know, if you're on Xbox and Vista players are there, you'll see a little PC, a little Vista logo, and if you're on Vista, you'll see a little Xbox for the Xbox player. So it's all, you know, they really have brought together the communities. It feels like there's still a few more things that they need to do. I said, like, well, you know, where's the gadget that just sits on your desktop that shows you, you know, kind of constantly updates your friends list, so I can see who's online and who's playing what, and I can get invites from my desktop. And they were like, oh, we haven't done that yet. And that seemed kind of like a no-brainer. I would have thought that would have been there at launch, but, you know, it seems like they are going to add those things.
What I'm really hoping for is that the patching process for games is as seamless as it is on the Xbox, you know, where you just pop in a disc and, oh, there's a new patch. Would you like to download it? Yes.
Well, they said that's one of the things that they want to do.
That they want to do, right, but I'm just hoping it makes it in. And I'm also hoping that it's not just, it's one of those features where I hope it's not just games for Windows, you know, games that have that logo on them, that have that feature, because I think it would help the platform so much.
Don't you think it would have to be, though? Because it'd have to be some sort of central server infrastructure for that to work. So you'd need Microsoft's...
But maybe you could get their support for that without being a Games for Windows partner. Yeah. I'm just saying. I mean, it's pie in the sky. I'm just saying I hope for it. Actually, Ubisoft has something similar right now for Vegas. I've been playing through Vegas on the PC. Great game, by the way. And I clicked on the icon just yesterday or the day before to play, and before I could play, it said, hey, there's a patch available. let me download that. And it actually ended up being a pretty big patch, so it took about 10 minutes. But it was nice that I didn't have to go searching for it. I just clicked on the icon to play, and rather than...
But that's the case with a lot of games these days. I mean, Company of Heroes does that. Supreme Commander of the Beta has been doing that.
Well, anything on Steam.
Yeah, anything that connects to an online service these days will do that.
Vegas does not connect to an online service ordinarily. It's just it's the first sort of single player game. I wasn't trying to play multiplayer. I'm just going through the single player game. Clicked on the single player icon or the game launch icon, and boom, it started loading a patch. Every PC game, as far as I'm concerned, needs to do that going forward.
Though on the one hand, and it needs to give you the option. It shouldn't force you, because I do hate when, for example, when I want to play Half-Life 2 single player.
Yep.
And I'll load it up, and it says, you have to download 300 megabytes worth of patches in order to play single player. I don't want to. I just want to play what I've been playing all along.
Live gives you that option. It says, do you want to install this patch right now? And you say no, you want. And it doesn't force you. But anywho.
On the Xbox.
One thing that I found quite exciting in one of the presentations that the Microsoft executive gave when we all sat down and had to listen to him talk for a bit was, thinking much further out. And it sounds a little bit pie in the sky, but it all sounded quite exciting, really, about how, bringing together Xbox gamers and PC gamers will allow potentially for some really kind of out there projects. One of the things they were talking about was the concept of kind of a war game, which, would be available for PC and Xbox. It'd be two different games, but it'll be one world. So, as a PC gamer, you take the game home and you play it. And for you, it would be kind of like an RTS Supreme Commander type game where you're moving, units around on the map. Mm-hmm. But those actual units are people playing their Xbox version of the same game, which is more of a kind of a, smaller scale FPS.
Sit
type
there
game.
And sit there and be controlled by PC gamers game.
That's
yes,
so
exactly.
Meta.
So you get to send Xbox gamers to their deaths.
Well, so it's,
what do they actually do?
It would be like Battlefield 2 or Battlefield 2142, where you're the commander and all the Xbox players are the soldiers.
Right, you get to decide where they go, but they still actually have to win the battle when they get there.
That's cool.
I've always thought it would be interesting.
Or some 14-year-old dork can run around and do whatever the hell he wants, and you can say, go over there, and he'll say, no, I want to go do this.
Well, but the gamepad does lend itself to certain controls better than the mouse and keyboard does.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, sports
like
games and fighting games.
Well, I'm thinking
and RTS.
Games. I'm thinking, like, for flight simulators or for driving, I'd rather play with the gamepad. Any kind of analog stick is going to be better than a keyboard and mouse.
That was actually one of the things that also came up yesterday was the fact that, as we've talked about before, the fact that all of the 360 peripherals you can now use on your PC, they're hoping will sort of jumpstart some genres that have made their way off the PC, like driving games, like, platformer type stuff.
So
I love that stuff,
worries
though.
You know why that worries
Tell me.
You know?
Tell me why it worries you, Dan. Why does it worry you?
I am concerned, deeply concerned, that it will make people even lazier when it comes to porting games. And when I want to play, say, Lego Star Wars, which they didn't do a terribly good job porting the controls on in the first place, they might require me to use a control pad.
Right.
And most cases, except, in some flight sims and stuff like that, I want to use the mouse and keyboard. I'm a diehard mouse and keyboard guy.
You're such
a
purist.
Yeah, but I want them to make the effort to make it playable on mouse and keyboard.
Well, they will.
Why wouldn't you want to play the game with the control method that's the best suited and the most appropriate to it? If that's a gamepad, it's a gamepad.
Sometimes it is, and on certain games I make that concession. But on most games, the vast majority of games, I will play through it with mouse and keyboard. And
it's hard to argue, though, Dan. But it's hard to argue that Lego Star Wars 2 would have controlled better on a mouse and keyboard if they had just taken the effort. I mean, that's an action game. I had no problem playing that with a gamepad. I mean, it seemed like the best fit for that. You
right,
disagree?
But I mean, well, there's no reason that it shouldn't be easily controllable with a mouse and keyboard. They just didn't take the time to make a mouse interface for it.
I have this theory, Dan, that you're just so console allergic that the idea of even using the Xbox pad on your PC, that's still somehow too tainted for you
no,
to feel comfortable
it's
with
not,
it.
It's not that I dislike consoles. It's just that a mouse and keyboard is what I'm used to. It's what I'm comfortable with. I want to be able to play my PC games with a mouse and keyboard. There's nothing about Lego Star Wars that is better for a gamepad than a mouse and keyboard. It doesn't require anything analog.
I disagree, too.
What about that game makes you want to play it with an analog stick?
Because it doesn't need a mouse and keyboard. The fact is...
It doesn't need it, but what makes you want to play it with an analog stick rather than a mouse and keyboard? There's nothing
there. The fact that it's simply the control method that's best suited for that style of play.
And what exactly makes it best suited for that style of play? That's what I'm asking.
Because the mouse and keyboard doesn't add anything to that experience. Like
it
you don't need to, you don't need
take
to, you don't
anything
need to,
away either.
You don't no no. My point is that it doesn't since it doesn't bring anything to the table. Why are we going to make them spend more money and more time in development to add a feature that is unnecessary?
Like, because it costs $35 to get an Xbox controller.
But you'll eventually. But the point is that you'll eventually need it no matter what. It costs $200 to buy Vista. You're going to buy that too. It cost a bunch of money for your new processor. You bought that, and you bought a new video card. I think $30 for a gamepad ain't that big a deal.
Poisonally. For what it's worth, there's actually a poll on Joystick today that specifically speaks to the weapon of choice in first-person shooters, and keyboard and mouse is, without surprise, blowing away
a
gamepad or a console control. But that's specific to shooter.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, yet another game that's a Vista launch, quote-unquote launch title is Halo 2. And, you know, I know that the team that's preparing Halo 2 for the PC has been looking a lot at, you know, whether or not people want to play it with a mouse and keyboard or with a controller. Mm-hmm. Although, ultimately, it looks like it may not matter because also, according to the team, including somebody who used to work here at Future, I don't know, can I name him? Because he was Frank O'Connor, who basically went on record as saying Halo 2 was not so great. Halo 3 will be way better, so which is great to hear, but, you know, considering the fact that it's coming out for the PC. Yeah.
They seem to have forgotten that game's life cycle is not yet complete.
Well, you know, it wasn't, but maybe it is
now. They're specifically talking about the ending and the fact that a lot of people were pissed off about the poor ending, and they said they didn't have time to finish it. It makes you wonder if now they get a second bite of the apple with the PC version, if they bother to go back and make it any better.
Okay, but to be fair, that's what Frank said. Frank just said, like, the ending could have been better, but what Chris Butcher was talking about, one of the game's engineers, was talking about the multiplayer component, and his quote was, we miscalculated, we screwed up, we came down to the wire, and we just lost all of that. So Halo 2 is far less than it could and should be in many ways because of that. It kills me to think of it, and I effing cannot play Halo 2 multiplayer. I cannot do it. So that's his quote. So now imagine, like, so now we review the game, and let's say our reviewer happens to like the multiplayer component. He's now disagreeing with the game's engineer.
But
a lot of the
Xbox community loves a Halo 2 multiplayer.
Yeah, there are millions of people that love Halo 2 multiplayer. It's still the most popular game on Xbox
Live.
I agree.
So obviously this is his own deal, but it seems like a weird thing to say while they still have to launch the PC version without saying, by the way, we fixed this in the PC version. So
that'd be really interesting if they decided to be like, well, now since we're redoing this anyway, we've taken the time to make it right. How much would that piss off, you know, people who play it on the Xbox?
You guys got the crash
That would
version.
Be great. That'd be very cool. Well, nonetheless, so yeah, as I was saying before, you know, if you're going to be playing Halo on the Halo 2 on the PC, it looks like you're probably going to be playing it with your mouse and keyboard, according to this poll. On Joystick. On the other hand, you're probably too busy anyway playing Burning Crusade, since 2.4 million copies of that game were sold on just the first day that
day
it was
one.
Released
24 hours.
Last week.
100,000 copies an hour.
Great googly moogly.
And that's just in the U.S. and Europe. They haven't even come up with numbers from Asia yet.
For Asia yet. And the funny thing is all over the web for the last week, you've seen these reports like, you know, Gears of War is unstoppable. 3 million copies sold in 8 weeks, and here's 2.4 million in a day. For a PC
for an
game,
expansion.
For an expansion pack. A $40 expansion pack.
With the monthly fee attached to it.
Yes. And
I should ask, I want to just remind everybody that, in fact, we were at a release of Burning Crusade, a sort of release party, and there's a video podcast up there of our antics. Yeah. So if you go to PCGamerPodcast.com and look on the right side, go check out what we were up to.
And this may surprise people. I'm not sure if I wasn't on the podcast for a couple of weeks, but there were more people in line to get the expansion for World of Warcraft, then we're in line to get a PlayStation 3.
So, Gaz.
Yes.
Are you actually playing World of Warcraft now, Gary?
You know what I think is impressive about that 2.4 million? Even more impressive than the number of copies sold is the fact that apparently fully half of those copies, 1.2 million, were online playing the first day.
It was 1.7, it turns out.
Oh, so even more.
7 million, yeah.
And, you know, and obviously the challenge, as any online game maker, including Blizzard, will tell you, it's one thing to ship those games, but then with an online game, you then have to be able to support the number of people that want to come on and play. And over Thanksgiving 2005, when Blizzard first launched World of Warcraft, of course, it was a disaster where a lot of people couldn't get on for days because the demand massively outstripped what Blizzard expected. But, of course, two years on, they have a much better idea of of how many players they have and how many people are going to go for the expansion. And it seemed like they were ready, because there are relatively few stories of people having trouble, over the opening few days. Everyone who wanted to get on with their copy of the Burning Crusade seemingly could. And I think that is the real, eye opener. That's Blizzard to be applauded for anything. It's that.
Yeah, we were quite wrong about that. We both thought there would be problems, but they pulled it off.
Well, there weren't no problems, but there wasn't anything like what we expected. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty flawless. So yeah, it's great. I've been working away at it quite constantly. I've taken a break over the last couple of days because I really did need to kind of get some work done. But I'm quite proud to announce. I'm very proud to announce that I got 69 last night. So I'm very happy about that.
So did I, and I wasn't even playing it.
You weren't even playing World of Warcraft.
Surely you saw that coming when you were in the NASDAQ. Surely you saw it coming.
I will say this much. It's got to the point, around about level 67, 68, the novelty of leveling up again, like, I was so over it. I was like, oh, I just want to get to 70s. Like, it was...
Did you feel the same way, Greg?
I was pretty happy to stay at 69. Well, guys, what do you do now? What is the super elite content now? You hit 70, and then is it new raid?
You hit 70, and then there's a whole bunch of instances and dungeons and raid bosses that you have to kill, and different quest lines you have to go on that only kick in at 70, where you're basically getting the keys and getting attuned to all the major end game instances like Karazhan and Mount Hyjal, where all the super loot is.
Right.
So, you know, there's just like in the first game, there's the leveling part of the game, mm-hmm. and then there's the end game, and Burning Crusade has quite a robust end game of its own. One thing that I'm really, really enjoying in the expansion right now is this the dungeon called the Caverns of Time, which allows you to go back in time and revisit famous. What's that?
And not play World of Warcraft.
Yeah, go back to the day go back to the day where you bought World of Warcraft and tap yourself on the shoulder and tell you not to do it.
Yeah.
But no, you can go back and visit, for people that kind of get off on the mythology and the lore of the Warcraft universe, you can go back and kind of be, a player in famous events in the history of the Warcraft universe and be kind of pivotal moments like the original opening of the Dark Portal and Thrall's escape from Dernhold Keep. And, you know, if you get off on the Warcraft mythology, it's really cool. It's kind of analogous to, you know, in Star Trek going back and helping Zefram Cochrane with his first warp flight. It's that kind of thing. You get to go back and be witness to these cool events.
That's great. And do you actually get hands-on? You participate or you just watch it?
No, you're actually participating. Like, you're there with Thrall kind of slaughtering the guards as he escapes from...
Nice.
You know, you have to, because there are these kind of ethereal dragons that are trying to mess with the space-time continuum. If you don't, you know, and Thrall needs to escape from jail.
And just then the Enterprise zooms in.
Yes. Yeah, so it's all that kind of thing, and it's very cool. And so you go back to different areas in the game, and there are areas that you remember from the original World of Warcraft, but they look different now because it's a different part of the history. So, like, areas that, you know, in regular kind of present-day Warcraft are all kind of smashed up. You know, are still kind of these glistening cities, and you can kind of walk around in the past, and it's really, really cool.
Let me ask you this. Everything, and maybe I was misinformed, but going in, I thought the way it was going to be was that to get from level 60 to 70 was going to take about as much time as it would have taken somebody to get from 1 to 60. But I'm hearing a lot of people are getting, you know, damn near close to 70, and it's taking
no
time at all.
Yeah, like that guy who did it in 28 hours.
But for power grinders, that's true. You can hit 70 in less than a week.
But you can
go from 60 to 70 in less. I mean, you know, and if I wanted to, if I put my mind to it, I could go from 0 to 60 in a week. I mean, a lot of people. But there are plenty of level 60, and maybe even a level 70 or two. You know, of the new races running around where people have leveled a character from 0 to 70 in about a week.
Is that right?
How many actual hours have you put in between 60 and 70? Have you checked?
It's hard to say, but I would guess probably about 50 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got to say it must be pretty impressive because I've been playing every day for hours and I've only gained 2 levels.
Whoa.
I'm only at 62.
You're doing something wrong.
Level 69, which I just hit, to get to level 70 is something like 3/4 of a million experience points to get to 70.
Hmm.
And what do you want right now?
And you get about 500 XP for everything that you kill. So,
wow.
You know, you do the math.
Yeah, my new Draenei Shaman is level 3, I think.
You've a little time ahead of you.
I thought, Dan, you didn't play.
Well, I was going to start up again, but I don't have time now.
You had some old character months ago, some dwarf or something?
I did have a dwarf, but I got bored of his roguing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Jeremy, you are playing again.
Yeah. I mean, like everybody else, I'm amazed by the launch, like you guys were saying. It went flawless for the first few days. Then problems started to set in a little later than we thought. Like, my server was crashing about every 10 minutes all day long. Oy. 2 days ago. Only in Outland, though. Like, the rest of the continents were fine. And if you were in an instance, you were okay. But if you were actually out there grinding, you were getting shut down every 10 minutes.
And even if you weren't getting shut down, there's enormous competition, you know, for mobs. You know, you're trying to do a quest, but
right.
You can't do it because there's 50 other people that want to kill the same character that you need to.
Yeah.
I hate when people interfere with all the fun of grinding.
Let me ask you guys this, a serious question, because I've asked the guys, like, here, I've asked Dan and I've asked Andy, and I've gotten a different response. And I'll throw this out there to the listeners as well. So I want to start a new character. I rolled a couple characters up to, like, you know, level 10 maybe a year ago and stopped playing. I just didn't get into it, but I want to give it another go. I've got Burning Crusade. I'm going to reinstall. What is a class? I'm a solo player kind of guy. What class can I play that will... I can get through most of the content by myself without having to group.
Hunter.
Jeremy, do you agree with that?
Hunter or rogues are very popular solo guys, but hunters...
Jeremy concurs.
Hunters would be fun because...
Rogues, druids, warlocks, and hunters are all great, very great solo
Andy
classes.
Andy the intern says hunter.
He says rogue.
Says rogue, and Dan here says that's not the way to go.
I went rogue and only got up to level 24 and got bored off my ass. Just because I spent so much time sitting around waiting for him to heal between fights, and I couldn't take on too many guys at once, or more than like one guy at a time.
I do think you'd have more fun with a hunter because you have your pet, which sort of acts not as another guy, but also kind of a companion in a weird kind of fantasy way.
A buddy to talk to.
Yeah. Hunters and warlocks are the two kind of the most overpowered classes right now, and they're both pet classes, which is great for leveling. I, as a level 60 plus mage now, I get to summon a water elemental, which is kind of like my little temporary pet. And it's really kind of opened my eyes to the fun of playing a pet class, even though I don't get to keep it around all the time. You know, I can have it attack one mob while I kill another and basically, you know, grind mobs at twice the speed. If I get into trouble and pull more than one mob, I can summon my pet and have it, you know, pull one of the guys off me. It's a really, really useful thing to have, and it's one of the reasons why hunters and warlocks have always been the most popular soloing classes. It's like having another player with you.
All right. What are you eating, guys?
I'm eating some beef jerky.
Listen, if you don't have enough to share with the rest of us,
those are the rules. Actually, guys, you got, in addition to beef jerky, you actually just got your hands on an 8800 and a 24-inch Dell monitor, right?
Yes, I'm very happy right now. I've got some great stuff.
I've got beef jerky, I've got a monitor. All is well.
Yeah, just make sure you don't upgrade to Vista until they get those drivers out.
Yeah, I'm not.
Supposedly they're getting it out on day and date of release, but who knows?
There was also that scary rumor going around at the event yesterday that iTunes does not play well with Vista.
Really?
I've heard that. Yeah, that you can't get an iPod going on a Vista machine right now for some reason.
I'm sure that just breaks Microsoft's heart.
Can't get a Zoom going either.
But I'm sure that it will be working very shortly. It's a non-issue. I mean,
no doubt
OS,
Apple will release
yet.
Some kind of patch or something.
Yeah, I would assume so. But you see,
it sticks in their craw to have to do so.
You were able to install your new video card without my assistance, which I was both pleased and surprised by.
It was remarkably easy. I don't usually like fiddling around with the guts of the machine too much in case I break something. It was kind of hard because it was two cards, two 6800 Ultras in SLI mode.
Yeah.
That I had to take out. So, and they're all kind of attached together as one big chunk.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to wrestle it out of there. And then the new 8800 is so
huge.
Long. It's incredibly long. It's like 9.5 inches long. That, you're not going to do anything with that, Greg, by the way?
But how long is the video card?
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
I'm leaving that one alone, guys.
I was just gonna say.
It just barely fit inside the case here. But it runs great. You know, I was trying Warcraft out on it, and I've got it maxed out. See, part of the reason why I felt
Warcraft
like I needed
can't
to get...
come close to maxing out an 8800. I know Oblivion can't max out an 8800 if you run that thing on a 30-inch monitor.
No, it's running pretty damn sweet. And, yeah. You know, I was a little worried because, you know, I just upgraded also to this really, really beautiful 24-inch. Is this the same one you've got, Greg, the 24-inch Dell?
Yeah, that's the same monitor I've got. Although I went from a relatively small CRT to that. You went from a 20 to a 24, which I wouldn't think would be that big of a difference, but you're seeing
don't think the 4 inches is going to make much of a difference, but...
Oh, it's huge.
But it is huge. You know, I went from a CRT to the 20-inch Dell, and I was blown away by that. Yeah. But I'm even more blown away by the 20. And what I've got them running now in the dual display setup. So I've got them, you know, and it really is kind of like, you know, big brother and little brother. It's, you know, there's no question which one of these displays currently rules my desktop. But, you know, Jeremy said get the dual displays running because it will change your life, and he's absolutely right. It's so cool to be able to play Warcraft on one screen and then without in any way disturbing the game, just mouse right over to the other screen and check my email and see who's talking on TeamSpeak and, you know, have an IM conversation without ever, you know, having to tab out of the game or anything. It's really great.
You have to do that in windowed mode and just
windowed. You put it in windowed mode, and then there's another box for maximized windowed mode.
Okay, I was going to ask.
And so you don't have any of the Windows XP bars around it or anything. It looks like it's playing in full screen mode, except
that
if you mouse off to the left,
that's very cool.
You know, you are in you're on your desktop screen on the left there, and then you mouse right back to it.
That's
well, I'm
really
definitely
cool.
doing that when I start
I like
playing
that.
Again.
Could that be dangerous if you're in a raid and you need to stay on your screen at all costs?
No, because it doesn't flip you out of the application when you don't have to alt tab back in.
You've got to click.
Jeremy,
you really are
playing again. Isn't that dangerous? If you're in a raid, you need to stay. Isn't that dangerous?
it's terribly
dangerous.
I'm currently playing with a 30-inch that Dell sent us for review.
Are you now?
Oh, it's huge. It's running at 2560.
He's playing with a 30-inch and he loves it.
Look, I've got to tell you something. This 24, when I first put it on the desk here, I was almost concerned that it was like, I literally have to look slightly to the left and slightly to the right to see the left and right corners of this screen. And so a 30-inch, I'm just like, isn't that, I wonder if that's just too big. And B, you've got to be running in resolutions that are just so huge.
Yes. Yeah, it's ridiculous. For me, the resolution is too great. The difference, you're in the true sweet spot, Gaz. The 24-incher, as far as dedicated PC monitors goes, that's the sweet spot for now. Dell did just release a 27-inch monitor that runs at the same resolution as that 24-inch.
We're looking forward to seeing that.
It's way expensive. It's glorious, but I think, you know, the 24 is actually at a reasonable price.
And I think you're right about the sweet spot. I think any bigger than this, and it starts to, I think, overwhelm you.
Well,
I don't think I would buy a 30. I bought the 20.1, and that one's nice, and I bought that before the 24 came out, so, oh well. But just playing with this 30, like, I have to look, if I'm looking in at a window in the upper left, and then I want to look at something in the lower right, I almost have to move my head. And, I am also running in dual monitor mode right now. I have my 20-inch, set up in portrait mode, so it's turned 90 degrees. And you know, so it's a long vertical thing since it's widescreen, and it's almost the same height doing that as the 30. It's pretty ridiculous, and it's great to have it there because I can have like a web page open and full screen and see the whole thing.
I mean the difference from the 20-inch to the 24-inch, just playing a game like World of Warcraft, which isn't even the most graphically phenomenal game. I mean, it's a beautiful game, but it's not Crysis or anything. But it just takes on a whole much more cinematic feel when you're playing it in the bigger size. It really does immerse you a lot more, I think.
The thing about the 24 is I used to be someone who used every app full screen. I maximized. You know, I'd browse the web, check my email. But the 24, that's just impractical. It makes web pages look a little odd because paragraphs turn into one-line kind of sentences, you know?
Oh, that's kind of weird.
Because it's so wide. So I've been trying to teach myself to wean myself off of being maximized by running my programs in Windows. So that's a little odd to get used to, but
I never saw that.
I'm never maximizing. Maximizing is terrible.
Well, no, so right now I've actually got a 37-inch monitor on my desk. So
what?
I've got a 37-inch monitor.
It's a TV.
It's an HD monitor.
Yeah.
But it's set up as a monitor, and it is glorious, and it is excessive, but it's great. But when I've been using my 24, I maximize,
yeah,
when I'm reading websites, and most of them, I can't think of any that actually, you know, that the formatting stretches out the text like that into a single line. What usually happens to me is that, you know, the page just takes up one third of the screen on the left side, and then on the right, it's just all, you know, blank space.
Right.
It's silly to maximize with a resolution that high, just because,
I mean,
with that size screen, you can put two web pages side by side.
But sometimes
and see all
I'm not, but you know what? You don't always need to be reading two websites at the same damn time. Sometimes I just want to read a website. I can maximize it. It's okay. I don't need to be doing a dozen other things.
I still hate that.
I need to run this and check my email and my spam filters to make sure that they are operating properly. Like, dude, you can only do so many things at one time.
But it's great just in regular desktop use, having that extra real estate. I can move things over onto the other little screen here. Like, I'm working on a document right now that's got a bunch of notes that I need to implement, and so I've got the document open on the one screen and the notes over on the other screen. And
that is terrific. Looking,
it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it.
Gaz,
what say you?
A program you're going to want is called Ultramon. That's a dual monitor kind of task managing thing. It'll put your taskbar things at the bottom of the proper monitor and all kinds of good stuff.
I feel like it's already doing everything I want it to do.
Yeah, you might check it out, though.
No, but you can do more.
You can do it.
Jerry, you can
more.
Have 14 things running at the same time. It's awesome. Don't ever maximize. Don't ever maximize. Don't do one thing.
Jeremy's right, though. I stopped
maximizing
things on this monitor because it just stretches it out too wide. You're better off running it just in a regular window.
I think it's funny that Greg is the one arguing against multitasking when he's got the quad core.
Well, I'm all about, you know, having games run, you know, more optimally with enhanced, you know, physics and sound and whatnot. But, yeah, you're not reading two websites at the same time. What is great, though, to Gary's point, is having like, when I'm editing and I've got, you know, a review open that's multiple pages, and to be able to see at least two of those pages at the same time so you can sort of go back and reference, that is terrific. But I'm not usually cross-referencing web pages.
You can have a review open on one and then a porn web page on the other. So there you go.
I was just going to say, I think I can make a good point just, you know, based on what you just said, Greg, that I need,
yeah,
for my job, I need, you know, an extra monitor. But DJ, in fact, made the point even better. That's much more efficient, would be if I could be editing on one screen and looking at porn on the other at the same time.
But we get in trouble. We can't be looking at porn here.
Listen, what's more important, getting in trouble or getting, you know, or maximum efficiency? What do you want?
This is true.
What do you
this
want?
This is true. I think the company would overall appreciate the maximum efficiency.
I think so too,
you know?
So,
did you see that SNL news skit about 60% of men browse the web for porn?
Yeah, that was funny.
Along with the other 40% of men.
Hey, PC Gaming Podcast. It's Nick from Cambridge, Ontario, Canada. I was wondering if you guys remember the LucasArts game called Grim Fandango? I probably have to say it's one of my all-time favorite games, and when I heard a rumor of a possible movie for it, which turned out to be a hoax, I was pretty excited. My question is, are there any specific games out there that you guys personally think would make fantastic movies? Also, I was thinking about when you guys asked us if we had any thoughts on what would make a good MMO. I had a thought that maybe a true medieval MMO would be pretty cool if pulled off correctly. It'd be nice to have an MMO that was in a medieval setting, but wasn't full of elves, mythical monsters, and crazy surreal landscapes. As always, great podcasts. You guys and other podcasts helped me get through the work week.
Hooray for Grim Fandango. I completely agree. I think that's one of the best games ever in the history of ever.
Yeah, it was, it was a moment in time. I mean, everybody was playing that, and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that they haven't done something with it.
I should add that it holds up. It's a really good game if you want to play something on your laptop, like on a plane or something that's not too taxing.
Yep.
And it's still really fun.
LucasArts really has let so many of its great franchises wither on the vine, don't you think?
Oh, where's Full Throttle?
You would have thought that Monkey Island might have made a comeback after all the Pirates of the Caribbean stuff, but
they let Sam and Max go. That somebody else had to do that. Take out the torch.
And they don't have to. I think the thing is like they didn't have to be adventure games. Like let's play a shooter, a full throttle shooter or something. Mm. I mean, like with those same pithy lines, could have been terrific.
How about a Monkey Island MMO?
There you go. What about a Coconut Monkey MMO? But you can't do much though because you have no hands. So manipulating your environment is tricky. But
what games would make good movies? I think, Dungeon Siege is not going to be a good movie.
Yeah, no.
Crysis, although we don't know the full storyline, they're designing it to have a lot of cinematic aspects. Like, when I was demoed the game at E3, Shavat, the lead designer, was talking about, it's like, and in this scene, we want you to feel the following emotions, and it's all about driving an emotional experience. And so my guess is when we finally learn the full story of Crysis, that it'll translate well, or it would translate well into a film. I think you're right. I think Dungeon Siege will probably not make a very good movie.
I asked Chris Taylor about that yesterday just to see the look on his face. he still hasn't seen it.
Really?
I don't know if he wants to.
Yeah.
But I think any Blizzard franchise would make a good movie.
Yeah, I was thinking I'd love to see WoW made into a movie just because...
I think they're still planning on making it.
StarCraft? They're beyond Warcraft. Planning. They are doing
just
it.
Because I'm so confused by the mythology of the thing. There's so many quests and stories and relationships. I'd love to see it explained in 2 to 3 hours.
I loved the cinematics in StarCraft. Like I always thought there was it was sort of like Vietnam feel to it on the Marine side that I thought was tremendous. I'm sure that would make a great movie.
Deus Ex might make a good movie. Or what else?
Your mom.
I still think Half-Life is viable.
Yeah,
I think Half-Life would be great.
They've been plugging away. I think they've had several scripts and several attempts to make a movie from that, and none. None that have really got off the starting blocks.
It could have like a great, if done right, it could have a great like Blade Runner feel to it. Sort of like the new, I didn't see Children of Men, but people are saying that's got a Blade Runner feel.
That's such a great movie. You have to see that movie.
I thought it had some Half-Life
too. When you say making a movie out of it, do you want to make Half-Life 1 or Half-Life 2? Because those are very different games.
Half-Life 2.
Maybe we could make it.
No, I would do Half-Life 1.
Really?
Half-Life 1 has a story that's easier to get to grips with.
Yeah, but it would just become the Doom movie.
Well, all of these are contingent on it not being a crap movie.
Contingent on The Rock not starring in it.
If you ask me, I played both Half-Life 1 and Half-Life 2. If you ask me what the story of Half-Life 1 is, I can tell you. If you ask me what the story of Half-Life 2 is, I have no idea.
But it's a cool setting, and there's a lot of cool stuff. I mean, it could be a Jerry Bruckheimer film.
As for upcoming games that could be a good movie, we got Hellgate, as seen in the intro cinematic, and Stalker, BioShock.
BioShock could be really cool. But
Hellgate has already got a lot of momentum as a kind of a multimedia property. There's novelizations and comic books are already in the work. They've got the Weta Workshop. The Sideshow collectible, figurines. They've got, pretty much everything except the movie already in the works. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's an announcement regarding that at some point in the future.
Hey, PC Gamer, this is Corey Thompson from Apex, North Carolina. And first off, I just want to say I love the show and the magazine. And now on to my question. Well, you see, I recently purchased Oblivion, Elder Scrolls Oblivion, and it runs very poorly on my PC. I have all the settings set to low, and I still get a pretty dismal performance as far as frame rates go. And I don't want to really just abandon the game, and I'm not upgrading till sometime in the next few months. But till then, do you know of any tips or tricks I could do to get more out of my machine? Like setting it to high priority in the task manager, or doing anything of that nature. So, please answer my question, and if you don't know anything, feel free to yell at Logan, because it's funny when you yell at Logan. Alright, thanks. Bye.
We think so, too. Logan!
Decker!
My tip is get an 8800.
Yeah. Easier said than done. I think there are, and I'm looking online as I say this, But I think Oblivion was one of those games where, you know, you could tweak an INI file pretty easily. So you could leave the game, tweak a text file that would allow you to do things like, you know, decrease the draw distance, and you'd improve some frame rates there. But I might have just dreamt that.
No, you're right.
Right now to see.
You're right. I remember there were a ton of tips out there when that game launched.
Yeah. So what I would do is I'd go to Google and I would type Oblivion, you know, custom settings, custom tweaks, maybe a plus INI, and see what's there. Because if you're unable to tweak the settings low enough in the game itself, and you're not going to be upgrading hardware, that's probably the next step. One word of caution: I would make sure that you back up whatever file it is that you're tweaking. Make a copy of that before you change anything. So that if you change something and you forgot what you've done, you can always go back to the original
without having to totally reinstall.
Yeah, exactly.
And you should probably also back up your save games, because Oblivion is a little bit touchy about those. I've had several games get corrupted.
DJ?
Yeah?
Brace yourself.
This is Pen 15 from Maryland. On episode 67, the question of PC versus console gaming came up once more. Out of this conversation, Dan stated that the textures and fear is the reason PC gaming is better. It's sad that the one distinguished art that games have above any other media, being gameplay, is obviously the last thing that is thought of. As someone who is dealing with the supposed frontrunners of innovation and first with PC gaming, I'm surprised that
just the texture resolution alone makes a huge difference.
Is what matters above the incredible AI, which is the real star of fear. While games on consoles are becoming considerably dumbed down for mass appeal and PC gaming becomes astronomically expensive, it's nice to hear that those in the media have their priorities intact. While I personally enjoy fluid animation and particle effects on the graphics side, it is in no way vital to the overall gameplay experience. My question to you, Dan, is: do you believe that textures is the real reason you play games? Before you answer, I'd like to remind you that Spore will be the ugliest best-selling game of 2007, and Crysis will be overshadowed by its greatness.
Throw down, Dan, come on.
You just got boned.
Bring it.
Now, that was taken wildly out of context. No, anybody who has ever heard me say anything about consoles, I mean, first and foremost, I don't like the controls. I was talking about how Fear looked on the consoles, in addition to, you know, who would want to play a shooter on a control pad? I don't get it. But yeah, I was just pointing out that in addition to the obvious control failings, it just doesn't look as good.
I'm actually going to come out on DJ's side here, based on what I saw yesterday at the Games for Windows event. They had Shadowrun running on Xbox 360 and PC to demonstrate how, you know, you can have the PC version and the Xbox version playing together online. But what it really demonstrated is just how superior the PC version looks. I mean, the Xbox version, it's no slouch, but you put it next to a PC running that, and just everything from the quality of the graphics to the high resolution to the fluidity of the mouse movement. I mean, the Xbox version looked like, you know, the Fisher-Price version compared to what the PC was doing.
Yeah, the frame rates weren't so great on the console version either. Maybe they're going to tweak that still, but it was definitely not as fluid as it was on the PC.
I'm not saying that the textures are the most important thing. That's far from it. I'm just saying that in addition to, you know, some people say, well, I don't mind playing on the control pad, and, you know, they may be freaks, but, yeah, I'll probably get that one played back at me too. For that set of people, I say, well, you know, if the controls aren't an issue for you, then it just looks better on the PC.
Playlist, everybody. Hey, Greg, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. Right now, I'm going through Vegas. I actually, right before Vegas, I have to admit, I played all the way through Gears of War on 360. I had played for a few hours right when it came out, and I think we talked about it on the podcast, Gary, and I think you as well, Jeremy, told me to keep going because it gets better, and I was like, yeah, whatever. But you were right. It gets a lot better. I do think the first 2 hours could have been paced better. There could have been some more exciting things going on. But some of the set pieces later on in that game were amazing. I still haven't played any multiplayer, but I ended up loving the single player and have now moved on to Vegas on the PC. and I'm having a great time with that.
I mean, there's something about just kind of crashing through, you know, the windows of the Stratosphere Hotel and taking out terrorists with the Vegas skyline in the background. It's just awesome.
And you have gotten it working widescreen now, right?
Yeah, so inexplicably, it doesn't work widescreen out of the box, even though it's a widescreen game on 360. It's only 4x3 on the PC, so there is a... we've got it in the mag this month. There is a website you can go to, and if we can look it up real quick, we can tell everybody listening.
Yeah,
it's widescreengamingforum.com.
There you go.
And I tell you something, the guys over at Widescreen Gaming Forum are going to be cock-a-hoop, because one of the things that...
might have to bleep that, I'm not sure.
You should probably see someone about that.
one of the things that the Microsoft people said at the event yesterday, because we said to them, okay, so what are the things that games have to do to be classified as a Games for Windows game and have that branding and that certification? And they mentioned that one of those things is you have to have widescreen support.
And Vegas is a Games for Windows game?
No.
But it is a 360 game. There were some exceptions. Like, they were saying, like, you know, Games for Windows games must work with the Games for Windows controller. Well, okay, but there have been a couple RTSs that have come out with the Games for Windows branding, and obviously those don't work with the game controller. So there seems like there is a little bit of room for negotiating there. I'm not sure what the actual guidelines are. But yeah, for now those guys are going to do some good business, because I need my games widescreen, and it works really well for Vegas.
DJ, how about you?
I have been playing a lot of Oblivion, and I did run into some bugs that have made me start a new character, because I for some reason it's crashing a lot on me when I go through. After about an hour of play, when I start going through different doors and it loads a new level, it'll crash in the middle of a load. And then if I reload and go through that same door, there's no problem. So I don't know what's going on there, but I read on a few forums that, yeah, there's nothing you can do about it, just start a new character. So I did that, but hopefully, if anybody out there has had the same problem and knows a solution, please email me, dan@pcgamer.com, because I'd like to get my character back.
Gaz?
It continues to be Burning Crusade, and will be until I hit 70 and get keyed for all the major instances, and then I'll be able to kind of calm down. And I'm, you know, between Supreme Commander, I'm looking forward to playing that very soon, and Command & Conquer 3 shortly after that. There's a lot of games on the horizon I'm interested in, but right now, I mean, even if CNC 3 and Supreme Commander were sitting on my desk right now, I'd still be playing Burning Crusade. nothing can challenge the dominance of that game.
Not even the Wii, Gary?
Not even the Wii.
Up yours, Wii. Up your Wii.
Jeremy, what about you?
Also Burning Crusade. And I gotta say, I loved this first realm that you go into as level 60. It's called the Hellfire Peninsula. And it's just got this great landscape, lots of NPCs, lots of really cool quests. You fly these bombing runs where you're actually on a griffin and you drop bombs on stuff and stuff like that.
Have either of you gotten a flying mount yet?
No, that's level 70.
No, that's at 70. Oh, Jeremy, you're going to enjoy it. There's a zone around level 64 called Nagrand where you get to do those bombing missions, but they're PvP bombing missions.
Oh, wow.
You can bomb players.
All right, that's cool. Because what I was going to say is as you move on to the next little areas, they're not as exciting to me. They sort of, I feel like Blizzard put a lot of effort into that first Hellfire Peninsula, but as you move on, it just becomes more of a grind. But this Caverns of Time thing sounds cool. The PvP bombing now sounds kind of fun. And I have seen these people in the flying mounts, and that looks like carrots enough to continue.
it's so funny. We had on our server the first level 70 on our server was a guy from our guild. And around the time, I was around level 66 at the time, and I needed help with a quest. And he had just hit 70, had just got his flying mount, said, I'll come over and help you. And it was like Superman. He flew in from the sky, helped me finish, you know, he totally took down this boss because he was level 70, and then he like kind of waved to me and jumped on his mount and flew, and he was gone, flew away from the sky. I was like, that was so awesome.
Who was that masked man? The masked elf.
They're very graceful, the flying mounts. They're beautiful.
Well, that is a... That's carrot enough for me. I have installed Burning Crusade, but I haven't had a chance to play it because it's really busy. We're about to go into production. So I've just been dabbling in a little bit of that. I played my first game of DEF CON last week, which I really enjoyed. I thought that was really fun, finally.
We still got to get one of those 8-hour games going.
Sure, why not?
Yeah,
it's real
time. I don't think that's going to happen now. Do you have any idea how much XP I can grind in 8 hours?
Yeah, and then the other thing I'm actually playing, just like Chuck's... Is it Zuma that's Chuck's secret
Zoom on his cell phone. I play it on 360.
Zoom on.
I have my secret casual game. Whenever I'm starting to feel kind of stupid, I'll fire up Bookworm and make some words, and then I feel a little
I like Bookworm. There's a new Bookworm, apparently, that's very good. It's almost kind of like an adventure RPG type game.
Really?
Yeah, but it's just a grander implementation of the same idea where you have to connect the letters to make words.
Yeah, Kristen just likes it because it came with a little worm plushie.
I didn't. Well, no. I've been playing Geek for years. It's on my Trio, too. But, yeah, there's just something really, because I'm a complete geek, there's something really satisfying about occasionally feeling like you've put together a really good word that uses Q's and Z's. So I've been doing that a little bit.
I just keep putting in poop.
Yeah, and I'm certainly not above doing a three-letter word to keep my game alive.
That's so. Four. Poop has four letters.
Oh, you're right. My bad.
She needs this game more than we know. More than we knew.
Now, see, being a lit major in college, I knew that poop has four letters.
Has four letters, right. Yeah. Well, once again, we've reached the end of another PC Gamer podcast. So do please send us your letters at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Send us your money at pcgamer.com/subscribe, and we'll send you a magazine in return. And, send us your general feelings of goodwill, because we could use them, and go ahead, make the world a better place. So for Dan Stapleton, Jeremy Williams, Gary Witta, and Greg Viederman, I'm Kristen Salvatore. Thanks for listening. Peace out.
Do not send us your poop.
I showed my roommate, I was sliding windows kind of back and forth between the two screens, and she thought it was some kind of dark magic. She's like, how can that be?
And did she mention wanting to have sex with me by any chance?
No.
Does she have a boyfriend yet?
Not that I know of, but I really don't think that's going to make any difference to your situation either way.
That is a good point. Sad but true.
I don't hear anything.
Did we lose V?
Yeah, Greg just dropped out for some reason.
And DJ talk once
more. Yeah, we did. Jeremy?
Yeah. Your voice is all kind of underwater.
Yeah, you've turned into that.
Jeremy, are you there?
Yeah.
Jeremy?
Yeah.
Hold on. Jeremy's here. Jeremy can hear you guys. Now, Jeremy, did you say you can hear Greg and Dan?
No, I can't hear Greg. He's gone.
Okay.
Jeremy, why don't you call us all back in? Call us all back in.
Well, everyone sounds all right, but you.
Oh, hello.
What?
Hi.
All right,
really?
I'm going to call you back, DJ. Greg, how do you sound?
I sound terrific
in
my head.
You sound good.
You sound good, man.